At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to Dion's Gaffer Tapes with me, Dion Dublin, my brand new podcast series that gets inside the pressure cooker of the world of football management. We find out what drives these characters forward to become the very best in the business. We came up with this show back at the start of lockdown, myself and a couple of pals on a Zoom call having a chat, and we thought, wouldn't it be great to get some of my old gaffers on the blower, share their experiences, their achievements, and their numerous stories about playing with the best and managing the best. Every week we will welcome a different guest into the studio, and to kick us off, I am absolutely delighted to have in the studio a footballing legend, a managerial legend, one of the country's greatest ever players, Mr. Glenn Hoddle.
So, boss, how are you? You are you're looking well, sir. You know, it's common knowledge that you had this health scare recently, but you'd never know by looking at you.
No, I'm feeling good, D. I really am. Yeah, you know, it's been quite a recovery. Got to say, it wasn't easy, but no, with a lot of support from family and friends and doctors and whatever, I'm feeling really good. Yeah, it's amazing, really, what can be done. And in a short period of time, really, it's only what 18 months since I had the cardiac arrest. So, thumbs up, everything's going well.
It's kind of bizarre that something can happen to you, boss, in your life so seriously. I don't know how long ago it was, but you don't look like anything's happened to you. Right, you did.
Yeah, no, it is incredible, really. When I often find myself thinking about, you know, how and why and whatever, but you can't really work it out. But I was gone, you know. If it wasn't for Simon Daniels, you know, that morning when I was in at BT, I was gone, you know, without his CPR and him reacting and keeping calm, I wouldn't be here sitting here talking to you, Dee. So it does have a massive impact on your life, of course.
I'm so glad you are, because you still owe me a tenner from the England.
I suppose you want it with interest as well, yeah, man.
Yeah. Please, if you don't mind, yeah. Are you happy where you are now in your life in regards to your job and stuff, or are you wishing you were back in the game, or?
Yeah, well, yeah, listen, we've been in football all our lives. It's, you know, you breathe it, don't you? You breathe it every single day, and you'd never say never in anything in life. But no, I'm very happy with what I've been doing and how it's all unfolded and whatever at the moment. Yes, so I've got, you know, lovely three grandchildren, really, and, you know, getting precious time with them. It's been wonderful, yeah. So, yeah, I'm getting a little bit of golfing every now and again, if I can.
A little bit. Every time I give it, yeah, I'm on the golf course, I can't talk, so I'm on the golf.
If that's how bad I am. That was the same round. It was three different days.
What was the point in your career, in your football career, where you thought, or was there a point in your football career where you thought, you know what, I could manage as well, you know?
Oh, that is a really interesting question for me, because you know what, Dion? I didn't ever see myself going into management as a player. When I was certainly in England, no way. And it was something that I never really thought about until one day I was training with Arsene Wenger over in Monaco. And I think it was the second season. And he said to me, Glenn, he said, have you thought about going into coaching or management? I said, no, I haven't. I haven't thought about that at all. He said, I think you should start thinking about that.
How old were you?
I was then, the second season, I was probably 29 going on 30. Was just about to hit the 30 straps, which, you know, back in the day that you were finished then at 30. But managed to play until I was 38 in the end. But no, so it was Arsene that sowed the first sort of bit of a seed. And then I started thinking deeply. And you know what, Dion? I got a very bad injury. I got an infection in my knee. I had a cartilage out on my left knee and it got infected. And I was out for 2 years. So it gave me another set of curtains to look through whilst I was injured. I couldn't play, So I was just looking through these. I was starting to look as a manager or a coach against the opposition, what Monaco, what we were doing as a team, what Arsenal. And so it gave me almost like a year of apprenticeship, really. I was out battling, trying to get fit again. But it gave me this sort of time to ponder, to think what I would do, how I would do it. So it was almost like a little internal apprenticeship for a year. And it sort of, it did work for me because I tried to get my knee fit again.
Yeah.
I did manage to play, but I was player manager at Swindon in the end when I went. But it was then when I came back to England trying to get fit when Swindon came along, and it just fell into my lap, really. I thought, yeah, this is my opportunity.
It's worked out perfect. So is Mr. Wenger the manager that sort of pointed you in that direction?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No one else had ever said that to me. And I hadn't really had those feelings of, like, I want to stay in the game as a coach. I was enjoying my football, but obviously he said this before my injuries. Ironically, about a year later or 6 months later, I had this injury that got infected. So then I started to think more seriously about it. But Arsene was the one that saw something in me, really, Dion, that I didn't see in myself. So, yeah, he was the one that triggered it. And the rest I sort of went down that road, yeah.
So your football career was for how long, boss?
Oh, it was, I was 17 when I started my debut for Spurs, and finished when I was 38. I was playing manager at Chelsea, and it was my last season. I just made a decision, Dion. It was really weird. We're playing in the semi-final of the European Cup Winners' Cup. And for Chelsea, we were playing Saragossa. And you know what? I was warming up as sub to come on. And I felt all of a sudden, you know, we all have to deal with pressure, don't we? To play sport, professional sport. You know, people think it's easy. They think it's a wonderful life. But they don't realise we're always under pressure. You're never playing really sort of just off the cuff and like you did when you were a kid. So it was abnormal. It was like, I felt the whole stadium, the pressure. We still had a chance. We had the away goals, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, get on. It was the whole stadium was willing me to get on.
Really?
And I felt this pressure. And I went on and we did okay. We didn't quite get to the final. We missed out by one goal, actually. We nearly did the miracle. But it was then that I quit. And my final league game was against Arsenal at the Bridge. But I made it up that night. I just came in and I went internally and to a few people close to me, I'm quitting at the end of the season. I realised.
Isn't it amazing that sort of, again, for me, I said, well, you know, that'll do me now, because mine was my body. My body was saying, listen, you can't recover. I can't keep doing that for you. I can't keep getting better, repairing and playing again. You know what, boss, what people don't know is, you know those little nicks that you get and those little kicks, and they stay with you.
Stay with you. As a young player, you never really, you discarded them. You didn't even think about them, really. And then, listen, we know that. No professional is ever 100% fit anyway. You've always got something that's, you know, niggling or whatever. But you're right. As you get older, and, you know, when I look back, actually, when I was in Monaco, that rehabbing for a year, trying to get my leg, it still swells now. If I play golf, it still swells up. And so I never thought I would be kicking the ball again. I just thought I would be going into management.
If you're playing one round of golf over 3 days, it can't be open.
Thank God for a buggy.
Where was it you felt the most pressure then when you were playing as a player? Because you Swindon and Chelsea and Monaco. Where did you feel the most pressure? Spurs, obviously.
Yeah, I think Tottenham, when you come in, you break into a team at 17 and you stay in the team. And then the most pressurised time for me was probably about three seasons in, when, again, you would understand setting a standard's one thing, maintaining it is another. And I was, you know, my reputation was growing quickly as a young player. I played the game, I feel, differently to most English players at the time. And I had a battle against the system in many ways, but I was strong-minded. And then after about 3 years, I realized that Spurs fans were they were expecting so much every game. And that was when I think about 2021 was when I really felt some pressure. And I think my form dipped a little bit, and it was a mental thing, really. And again, it's experience. You come through that and you get, you know, you're a better player for it in the end. But it can be that crossroads moment where some people crumble, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, the pressure gets to them, and sometimes you're immune to the pressure. But that third year, I was thinking, oh dear, every single game, they're expecting me to pull up, you know, roses every game. And it was
strange because you and Ray Wilkins, God rest his soul, seemed to play similar games. You passed similar balls, you tried similar things, but you seemed to be the only two that were playing that way that I remember.
Yeah.
Which was very different to everybody else. Everybody else is running around and trying to kick each other.
Yeah.
You two seemed incredibly calm on the ball. Mm-hmm. Did you realise you were different?
Yeah, I think we did. I think I can only say that I played the game just naturally, really. It didn't come easy because you put the long hours in of kicking a ball against a wall or playing in the park or playing with my dad in the park or in the garden or in the living room driving me mad.
When the parents went out.
When they were in. So it was forever. You know, when I think back, Dion, the thousands and thousands of hours that I was kicking a football was quite incredible, you know, and I was naturally gifted as well. So it's, you know, I just wanted to play football, and I just had practice time with myself. I had practice time with my dad, and it was like going to Tottenham when I was 11, you know, playing against in the gym down there. So it was football, football, football. But you're right, actually, it was tough for people like Ray and myself. And because the game was so different then. I mean, you came into it but even in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, a lot of teams were playing direct. They were the ball was in the air. And if you're a creative player, England was the hardest place to play. And it was hardest place for foreign clubs to judge you, actually.
You know, your transition, boss, from player, being the purest of players, to then being a player manager, to then being a manager only. Did you ever get frustrated by the player you were and then the players you were managing?
No, I didn't, because I think that's why Swindon was wonderful for me as a manager, to player manage. And then the first bit I was there, I was just manager because it was near the end of the season. I couldn't play anyway, but my knee was too sore. But it was interesting for me because Arsene Wenger saw how I would talk to players in the team. And I went back to that and he said, Glenn, you've got a lot of patience with the players. You know, I can sell the way that you're talking. And I remember George Weir. You remember George Weir?
Yeah, I do.
Of course you remember George Weir.
Yeah, of course.
George Weir first played at Monaco with us. And he was a 21-year-old, raw as anything, literally as raw as you'd ever seen. But what a talent. What a talent.
Really?
But George didn't understand anything about where to be defensively. He didn't have a clue.
Had been coached.
No coaching. He didn't understand. And I played number 10, and I played just behind him. So I was literally, Arsene said to me, you're going to have to talk to George. I said, I was literally playing man management things with the game on the pitch before it even was invented. Because George would say, Glenn, because he spoke English, and he would wait for me to tell him where to, you know, when to press. Don't go yet, George. We're not ready. Don't go now. Go wherever. No, pull off, George. 5 yards this way. I literally played his game for him defensively, and then when he got the ball, bang! He could. Well, he couldn't. No one could tell him.
Well, going forward, he was amazing. Going forward, because he's a free spirit, wasn't he? To watch.
Free spirit. He was wonderful. And the day he arrived at the ground with a little paper bag under his arm, and in the paper bag, brown paper bag, was his boots. And he opened his boots up, and he was in this robe. And he'd come on trial. He'd come on trial, Dion, and he was unbelievable in the first game. We had a practice game, and for 10 minutes, he hadn't touched the ball. Mark Hately was the other foreigner. He was up front in the first team with me, and we're playing against the reserves. And then suddenly, after 10 minutes, he got the ball and he just beat three or four people, that dummy that he had.
Yes, yes.
Amoros was a fantastic French, he was the French left back. He actually left him on his backside. He went past Battiston. He went past about four players and he smashed this ball against the crossbar. And it flew out the other side of the pitch. And I just went, wow. And I went, so I said to Mark Aitley, I said, boy, Mark, you better get your finger out, son. He's after your job. Mark weren't very happy, like. I bet he can't edit. Mark said, I bet he can't edit. But no, and George went on from that day, brown paper bag with his boots in under his arm, bless him. He went on to be World Player of the Year for AC Milan. And it was fantastic. So getting back to the question, was I was almost like coaching on the pitch, some, you know, when I had the experience. And that's when I thought, well, actually, what I can do, you can't judge your players by or your team by the teams that you've played in or by the player that you are, because I wasn't the greatest tackler. I wasn't the greatest header of the ball. And you need a bit of everything in football. That's the beauty of it. You need that balance as a team. If you haven't got that balance, you won't win anything as a football team. So I used to admire headings and think, I can't edit like that. So people used to look at me and think, well, I can't score like that or I can't pass like that. But then it wasn't for me to look down on anyone. It was me to admire what they could do. And that's where I put the jigs, you know, it's like a big jigsaw, isn't it? Putting your team and squad together.
Yeah.
You're having to balance it all off. And you knew players weren't. And if you could help them, that's what I was there for as a coach. I think there's a manager's head. There's a manager's head that has to deal and manage upwards in the club. It has to manage your staff. It has to manage. But then management and coach is different. And I had a coach's perspective as well as a manager's head. I would give things to the players that I think would help them, that could help them. Just that little thing that might...
Little bits, exactly.
Little bits of experience that I've had and handed down to me that I handed on to them. And I think I have helped them. You know, when I was looking back, I wanted to improve my team. I wanted to improve the players. I'm not, you know, I wanted to get results, of course. You've got to get results in football. But I wanted to improve the player and whether it was anything, really, defensively or attacking, it didn't matter. And that was important to me.
What was the thing that you didn't know that you had to do as a manager? You know, you're a player, then you go to being a manager. What did you find really difficult? What made you sit up and go, oh, I didn't realise I had to do that. Oh, that's quite difficult. Or was there anything that really shocked you about being in charge?
I think I was lucky in the sense I grew into that, because I think there was some of them surprises, yes. And you learn, you did. I got thrown, Swindon approached me. I hadn't been on coaching courses. I hadn't been on anything. But Swindon wanted me as manager. And they wanted me as manager, not player manager. And I said, look, I'm not sure whether I can play. My knee's not great. And in the end, I did manage to play. But you had to learn on the job.
Yeah.
That was my apprenticeship. And I think that's fantastic. I think what Frank Lampard has done has been brilliant.
You know? Yeah,
listen, Derby's still a big club, don't get me wrong. But he had that year, which is invaluable for you to learn things. The things you're saying, I can't give too many. It happened every day.
Yeah,
probably. There was too many things that you go, wow, I've got to deal with that. How'd you deal with that? You know, you're thrown in at the deep end a little bit and you have to deal with it. Sometimes you make a pig's ear of it, and sometimes it works well for you. But I think looking back, it was the amount of sort of man management that you had to have at club level.
Yeah.
It was difficult later on in with England because we didn't have the players. You were only leasing the player, really.
That's right.
You were renting the car out for that 10 days. But certainly at club level, the man management side and the realizing that they're human beings, footballers, which I was when I was a player, obviously. And that's where your number two and your staff come in.
So important, aren't they?
They are so important to find out whether, you know, little Johnny, the baby's ill and the wife's not happy. And that affects performances.
Of course.
And they're not going to come in, as you know, Dion. They're not going to come in and spill the beans and tell you that because they think, oh, I'm not letting them know anything.
Two proud footballers, boss. We don't talk. We never used to talk then.
Exactly. And you have to be very astute to see whether he's not quite right today. Let's get to the bottom of that. You couldn't do that all day, every day. You had other things to do. But there was this part where that was important to me. The coaching and the sessions and how we're going to play and the tactics.
Is that second nature?
That's second nature. And the most difficult thing was after being 4 years as a player manager was when I'd given up. And that season when you go out and they all go down the tunnel and run on the pitch and you turn right or you turn left and you're sitting on the bench.
That's right.
And you're thinking, wow, this is different now.
Because yeah, that's me done. I'm done now.
You can't influence it with the ball. The big change. But it was a bit scary as well because you're out of control. It's theirs. It's theirs, you know.
Were there players during your career that you thought, oh, gosh, what a nightmare he is? Or there must have been, because you managed so many players. There must have been players that you thought, oh, gosh, stop moaning, man.
I was okay with the player that might be a problem, you know, because he's a good player and he's like that. But it was the moaners that used to get me down. As a player as well, you know, when you had people that would be moaning about whatever session we're doing or we're running too hard. You know, you've been there. And those players used to get under my skin and it was a real test not to sort of, you know, go for it. And I'd be like, shut up. I need him on Saturday. I need him Saturday. I can't say that.
You need to do your running for you on Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. Oh dear. No, so that all them things just happen, you know. There's no book, there's no coaching course to go on that. There really isn't. You people think that, you know, you get your badges and whatever. That's one thing, yeah, sure. It's a bit like driving. You've got to drive a certain way to pass your test, and then afterwards it's nothing like that. You drive how you want to drive, or you drive in a different way. So it's they're the things that you don't know until you're in the job and you wonder why all these other things. And to a certain degree, I would imagine even more so maybe now in the modern day, if you don't watch it as a manager, you end up having to put out fires every day, too many fires every day.
In regards to what?
Problems. There's so many problems at a football club. There's so many people that someone's, you know, phoned in, he's got flu, so he won't train today. And you're thinking, will he be fit for 2 days' time? The doc, there's fires coming from your left, right and centre. And you're always trying to put fires out.
And it's always at your door?
Always at your door, because at the end, the buck stops with you at the end of the day. You can delegate certain things, but the decision-making is yours. But it can drag you down. And you have to, again, it's the only experience that teaches you this, getting in there. You have to sometimes drag yourself out of that. Because everything can become too negative.
Yeah.
And putting all these fires there, all these problems, all these players have got problems, and he's got that problem, he's got that problem, he's an injury coming back. And they're all sort of, the balance of the group of players and the mentality of the players is always changing. It's always flowing and changing. You have to sometimes just pull yourself out of that and look at positives. I think managers would all say to us, I know what you're saying, Glenn, because it happens to us all when we're in management. And then, unfortunately, you can end up focusing too much on the negative thing that's happening around the group. And you end up spending too much energy on that.
Correct.
Not on what's going to win you the game on Saturday.
Yeah, on the focus that really is going to help you achieve.
And I had to learn that over the first four years player manager. And then in the next two or three, I had to learn that very quickly that, don't keep trying to put these fires out. Some of that's not your fault. Most of it isn't your fault. Most of it is down to the player or down to the injury or down to the doctor or down to the physio to work with. So you can end up taking on too much. And that's one of the things I would advise a young manager.
Two questions here in one. Is there a manager now that you liken to yourself? And the second part of the question, boss, is as a young Glenn Hoddle, just coming into management, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, let's do the second one first. I think what we've just spoke about would be one that I'd have sat myself down, if you like, and said, look, you're going to go through these worrying times and worrying things. Yes, address them, but don't focus on them too much, because they will come. If you're running a football club, they will come. There's so many negative things that hit you, even off the pitch with the club, or the running of the club, behind the scenes, whether it's the transfers or whether it's this or whatever it is, there's a multitude of negativity that can hit you. And I'd be saying to yourself, don't drag yourself into that mode. You've got to get out of that scenario, and you've got to make yourself as positive as you can to then go out and get your positivity and get clarity for your group.
And I suppose you have the right as well, Gaffer, to delegate that responsibility. Sure.
Yeah, you do. You do have that as well. And that's where you can use the delegation pretty quickly. You delegate the positive, but the negative seems you can't delegate.
Yeah.
It comes back to you in the end. So I would say to a young manager, look, deal with a little bit of it, but a lot of the stuff is out of your control. Don't let it fester. Don't let it worry you, and don't let it unbalance the squad.
Is there a manager managing now that you'd say?
I think I do. I don't know whether it's, I'm not saying he's similar to me or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I do like what I'm seeing with Frankie Lampard. I think he's been excellent with the year, like I said, this apprenticeship that he's had. And Jody Morris as well. I think Jody has been a brilliant acquisition for him. I think they make a really good team. He knows Chelsea as well. Ended up going to Chelsea inside out. Jody's obviously coaching there for a long, long time at the youth level, and now they're all coming through. But I see the way they're playing. I see the way that he's changing things when he needs to change them.
He's brave, isn't he?
He's brave. I'd say to him, remain brave, because sometimes as you get older and more experienced, sometimes you might not get as brave. But he's astute. He knows the game. The players have got respect. He's got a very good squad there. I expect them to challenge for the league in 2 years' time.
Yeah, me too. There's a couple of other clubs as well that are going the right way. Obviously, United being one of them. But it is good to see. Would you say this is a massive question? I know, but I have to ask you because you're the kind of player and manager that would possibly see it. Is the game right now in the Premier League, is it better than when you played, or is it just different?
Well, it's massively different. Of course, without a doubt, it's massively different. Technically, it's far better. And it's great to see these young players. They're all coming through with great techniques. They've got wonderful pitches now on the academies to work with.
How spoiled are they?
Absolutely. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? When you think the pitches we played on, that was a massive difference between the two. When people say about players and era, different eras, I rather than looking at players like Messi and Ronaldo and comparing them to, say, Maradona or Cruyff, I look at it the other way. How would Messi play in that era, in the 80s? Not the other way round, because I know what Maradona could do on pitches and rules like this. But I would say the question is, take them back to our era and with the pitches as they were, the boggy pitches, the terrible, you know, and the Maradona got kicked to pieces in 82.
Yeah.
You know, and people would just kick him for four or five times before a referee even was thinking about booking someone. And I'm thinking, could Messi have played under them circumstances? Could Ronaldo have played that way rather than the other way? Because I think Maradona and the likes of Cruyff and the likes of Platini and all them greats, they would find it so much easier here now in the pitches and no one can touch you.
No, that's true. God, the pitches and the ball and the physicality and, you know, you might get chinned, but the referee go, play on. It's fine. It's just they carried on. Roger Milford would just say, play on.
Didn't see it.
Carry on.
We've only got, when you think back to playing against Wimbledon, and it was just a war, wasn't it? Physical, mental war. And they did what they did. And that was, again, it was intriguing when we had to face them. But that's how we play. So is the game, as the game moved on? Yes, it has. The pitches, the players, there's still some wonderful, I think great players would play in any era.
Yeah.
De Bruyne would go back now in the 80s and still be wonderful player, and David Silva and all these great players, and vice versa. You could bring, you know, the great players of the 80s and the 90s or the 70s even going back, They could play in this era, definitely.
Gaffer, tell me about. I've got to talk to you about England. Managed at Swindon, been a player manager, Chelsea as well, all that kind of stuff. What about England? That must have been severe pressure.
Yeah, it was. It was, but it was pressure for the right reasons in many ways. Because I loved the fact that I got the opportunity to work with the best in the country. It was just wonderful because, I'd done what I'd done as a player and as a manager. And then to get that opportunity to try and go to the World Cup. And if you remember, it was a very difficult time as well. Mm. It's a difficult job anyway. But I was taking over from Terry Venables, who was about to play in the Euros at home, all games at Wembley. And I was named them to be manager for whatever reasons, that was similar to how I went in the end. It was ridiculous. Terry shouldn't have been taken over in 96. Terry should have still been manager. Of course, my time might have come a bit later, but whatever happened. And then I'm having a press conference before the Euros with Terry sitting next to me. And I'm thinking, this is, I'm a patriot. I'm England through and through, and I want England to win the tournament. But if they win it, God dear, I'm under some pressure then, isn't I? So it was a very strange time going in. I don't think any England manager has ever done that before, gone in knowing he's going to go in. And then, after a tournament, particularly at home as well in England. So the pressure was, it was on from the start to qualify for the World Cup. But all that, cutting that away, and cutting the stuff that might come off the pitch with England managers in the past and what happens, it would never, ever in a million years would have been a reason to not take the job.
Mm. Was it more difficult to manage those individuals as they were, as you said, the best of the best at that time? Did you have to tiptoe around or anything?
I tell you what, it was 50-50. There was an advantage, a massive advantage, because when you're an England player and you're turning up to go and play for your country and represent your country and whoever the manager is, you're going to be, let's say, in your best behaviour. You're going to be wanting to play. Everyone can't play, but you want to play. So you're going to put everything into your training. You're going to find it, it's a bit refreshing away from your club, meeting other players. So there's a lot of positive things there that I think work for a manager, but also there was the pressure of players coming in and you not really getting to know them enough. And this is when you go back to, I knew the players inside out of their ability, of how they could play, but I didn't know them as real people. And we didn't have the amount of time that Gareth has now.
Yeah.
There wasn't the double matches going on. It was like sometimes, certainly as a player, I remember me being absolutely shattered on a Sunday after playing a live game, because only live games were on a Sunday. And then you'd go in we were playing on the Wednesday and you'd be absolutely shattered on the Monday morning. Yeah. Yet, we had to train and we had to, there wasn't like, we'll let him have a warm down and because there was only one more day to prepare before you played. It was that ridiculous. Yeah. So it was not quite like that when I was England manager. It was slightly better, but not, you didn't have the time to really get to know the players unless you were in a tournament. But then when you're in a tournament, the whole thing is so big. And half the time you're being dragged somewhere else for a media or the press every day. So, and then the players wanting their time on their own.
It's quite tough, isn't it, to get to know the individuals intimately, because you're all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's where it is frustrating, and that's where it's a bit of a mishmash. I think looking back, I think I would have probably tried to, if I had my time again, I would have probably brought more of a sports psychologist in to bring that all together. Because unless you actually designate a period of time to get to know the players in a group and get them to know each other. The problem is as well, Dion, that you can do that for one game and then a month, 6 weeks later is your next game.
Correct.
And you think, all them players, no. Six of them players are not there. there's another different six. So you're always, you're building something and the foundations are being taken away. So it would be very tough to do that anyway. But that was tough. That was a tough side of it, actually.
So, listen, I can ask this question and I can completely gloat as well. I'm going to. It's my show, so I intend to ask what I want to ask. I'd like to ask, and I've never had a chance to ask you this, as my England manager, why did you pick me?
Why did I pick you?
Yeah.
I saw things, I think, in you that other people weren't seeing. I saw you as a doubleheader, as a centre forward, and a player that could play at the back. And I felt that I would never have picked anyone for the sake of that, what I've just said to you. Never in a million. You had to be absolutely good enough. And me and Johnny Gorman, we used to come back. I used to send John, or I'd see you, or John see you, or the scouts, other scouts would I'd send to see you play. And every time was a glowing report. Or every time I saw you play, I thought, and you know what, Dion?
Yeah.
You're interesting. In the sense that I don't think I've ever been able to say this to you. I've said this to you to other people before. There's two people that I saw as players that I felt would be really good coaches, whether they were managers or whatever, I don't know. You were one, and Dave Besant was another one. The way you spoke on the pitch as a player, particularly when you're up front as well, but particularly at the back, because it's easier at the back,
yeah,
obviously. But the way you speak. The way you were speaking to players and what you were saying, the constructive things you were saying, I thought, crikey, he's going to be a coach. He's going to be a coach, this fella, because he can identify what's needed.
Yeah.
And you were spot on like that. And I, the more the training sessions that we had, I would say to John, did you hear Dion again? He went, yeah, he's what he was saying. So you had this capacity to not only be involved playing, but that's what I think a good manager is about. I think you can spot somebody that's going to be a good manager. And I think that's what Arsene saw in me. I didn't see it myself, but I would imagine if you were working close with, say, Frank Lampard as a player, you could probably hear him in training, particularly when he was experienced, and think, wow, actually.
Yeah, he could be a coach.
He's thinking deep.
If you'd have told me that earlier, Gaffy, I would have taken that on board. I ended up being on Holmes Under the Hammer. I'm now just been talking on the TV about houses. You could have told me that earlier, boss.
I should have mentioned it. But again, we didn't have that much time together.
Exactly.
So, I've got 20 odd players with England. That was the real frustration of England. It really was.
No, you told me, boss. You actually told me. You actually said to me, Dion, if you were centre half. When you had me, if you were not an outside half, Dion, you'd have played for your country 50 times at least. That's what you said to me. You know, because I know that being a centre forward right then was possibly, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, was one of the hardest times to try and be centre forward at a smaller club in stature in Coventry as I was.
And
you've got Lighty, Ferdinand, Shearer, Sheringham, Fowler, Owen, and so on and so forth.
That was unbelievable, really, when you just say them players' names. That's, you know, what you were up against, as well as what I had to choose as well. It was amazing. You know, there was so many good players, front players. So many. I was
It was great though, wasn't it? What a choice to have, Gaff.
Oh, what a choice to have. It was a tough. And then young Michael came on the scene as well at 18.
By the way, on his debut, if he'd have squared it, I'm not helping this one, by the way, boss. But if he'd have squared it, I'd have got my first goal for England.
You'd have got your goal. When was this? What game?
Chile.
Was the first
at Chile. Wembley.
Yeah. we got spanked.
Just square it, Michael.
Yeah.
He scored though. He absolutely killed me. I remember going. Yeah. There's so many things that are coming to me right now, but. There was one moment, one training session, England training session, where we'd finished training. The first team we finished, 24 players, whatever it was, how many players you had, we'd all finished. Oh. But I think one of the keepers got injured or got a niggle. It might have been Walker or Nigel, or I don't know who it was, or James, I don't know who it was. And you called Shaka from the 21s. Or whatever it may be, he said, get Shaka over. He might be needed, you know, in 2 days' time. Let's get him involved with the lads and let's get him. And we We were stretching on this day, right? We were stretching. We were just waiting here. Shaka turned up off out of the car. Somebody went to pick him up. You put him in goal, and you just started to warm him up. We're now stretching on the pitch, by the way. We're watching this happen. I don't know if you remember this, but you had a bag of balls, bag of 10 balls, and you just threw them into the D on the edge of the box. Shaka's in goal. He's strapped his gloves up, and he's clapped his hands together.
I think I remember now.
And boss, I kid you not, you had 10 balls, and you pinged 5 with your left foot in the top corner, and 5 with your right foot in the opposite top corner, and were wetting themselves.
Are you sure about that?
Let me tell you, boss, the lads were wetting themselves because Shaka was diving about like he was waving to his family in the crowd.
I can remember Shaka bringing Shaka over. I can remember it in some good shots, but I'm not sure it was 5 and 5.
Oh,
but
boss!
I'll go with that story.
Just go with it, boss. It was just incredible. just before I let you go, Gaffer, and I do appreciate your time, but there's one question I like to ask my old managers. It's a bit of a difficult one, but if you were to have a dinner party at your house tonight, and you could invite, let's say, 4 managers, who would they be? And why?
Oh dear, that's a tough question. I definitely have Arsene Wenger. I was very close to Arsene, and we won the league, French league, together. And he was top man. And again, as I said, Arsene and myself really got on well. We would spend time talking not about football, sometimes about philosophy of life and all sorts of different things. And that's where, you know, Arsene's a very interesting guy. He really is.
Knowing you both, very similar, quite chilled out characters that know the game, you know.
Yeah.
Not trying to pull up any trees, but you know the game. You don't have to prove yourself to anybody. And that's what I get from you two. Maybe that's where you got on.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're on the same wavelength we were in football-wise, definitely.
Arsene's got a seat.
Yeah, Arsene's in there. Long as he doesn't bring his pre-match meal with us. we had to eat all the time. God, dear.
What was it, boss?
Oh, so much. I couldn't believe how much they ate. We ate so much before a game. It was incredible. We ate all the right stuff.
Yeah.
But I could not believe how much I was eating. And he said, "You have to eat it." I said, "I don't want to eat it. I'm full up." He said, "Mate, Glenn, you have to eat it." "Glenn, you have to eat it." And I'm like, "But I don't want to eat." There was rice. There was pasta. There was carrots. There was broccoli. But it was the oils. He had these oils that he put on. He said, I don't want olive oil. I want, he named these oils. He knew what, he was down to everything.
He's definitely not cooking in the meal.
He's not cooking. He's coming, but he's not cooking. I think purely because of, we had our fallouts. But because of the success he had, Sir Alex. Yeah, the experience that he's got, he would definitely be one. I think that would in anyone.
2 seats taken.
Yeah, that's 2. I'm trying to think. You know what? I think I mentioned him earlier, but for me, when I was under 21s, I was managed by Terry Venables, and Terry was the one that I saw as somebody that I learned quite a lot off. You know, I'd come away from training sessions all my life, and what did I learn today? Well, I learned that myself. I learned probably more at Tottenham sometimes from some of the experienced players more. It was about spending that time with people. But Terry Venables for me was a very astute coach, knew the game, and came up with little creative things, little creative nuggets. And little thoughts that you make you think and say, take it out on the pitch. And you think, actually, it did work. That did happen. That did work. Yeah. Yeah. So I think Terry definitely would be on that table.
You've got Arsene, Sir Alex and Terry. You've got 1 seat left.
God, yeah, that's a tough one.
You've only got 1 drinker in there, I think. I think Gaffer's the only 1 drinker, isn't he, Sir Alex?
I have my moments. that's difficult. The next one. Who would I? Well, has he got to still be living?
Dead or alive, boss?
Dead or Alive. It's got to be Sir Ralph.
Sir Ralph.
Well, he's won the World Cup, you know, and the big question, how does it, you know, I would say to him, like, did you ever dream that we would never win another tournament after you picking that trophy aloft? You know, because I do think we thought it was going to come round the corner to a penny, you know, it was like, yeah. And I think 70 might have been, I think we had a better squad 70 than we did 66. But, you know, that, no, Sir Ralph, I think Sir Ralph has, I don't think Sir Ralph drinks either.
Terrible manager.
Pretty boring night, really.
Okay, this is my very last question. The best player you ever managed, in your own opinion, the best player.
Wow, I thought you were going to say played with, but managed. God, oh dear.
One individual that you thought, wow.
There's so many good people. When I look at England, particularly England, I mean, I've had some great players. I had Ruud Gullit at Chelsea, who wasn't at his peak. He had a knee, but he was a wonderful player. Wonderful player. You know, I'm going to pick, and I've said it before with other people, but it's going to be Paul Scholes. I think Scholes, he was just different class. He really was. In any, you could play him as a second striker, off the front, out on the left, and you only had to tell him once, just once.
And he got on and with it.
It was done. And he was one that got on with it. He just got on with it, no problems. Didn't have to put any fires out with Scholes.
So, no baggage.
No, he was a super player. He had a pitcher, he could score goals, he could create, he could play deep and play deep and
clever pass.
Yeah, great player. Great. But you know, how can you Ince was a great player for me.
I'm not having that. Don't tell him that, please. I'm not letting him listen to this gaffer flipping hell. Gosh,
have I said the wrong thing? No. Alan Shearer, you know, there were some fabulous players. That Michael Owen, you know, wonderful.
So many. Thank you very much, boss.
Leon.
I do appreciate it. Listen, I've never had a chance to say this, but I'm going to say it now. You gave me the chance to represent my country.
Ah, well, you only got it because you deserved it.
Yeah.
Leon. You deserved it.
I've got to say thank you for that. Back in 1998, yeah. I sincerely appreciate it. It's on the CV. And my shirt is on the wall in a glass frame right behind this pull-up banner, and it ain't going anywhere. And it's down to you. So thank you very much.
No, that was, as I said, you deserved it, mate. You deserved it.
Thank you, boss. And thanks for your time today, by the way. Mr. Glenn Hoddle!
Brilliant.
Thanks very much, boss.
See you later, Dion.
That's it for this episode of Dion's Gaffer Tapes. Huge thanks to my guest this week, Mr. Glenn Hoddle. He's the first of a whole series of legends. We've got some absolute beauties coming up for you over the next few weeks. You can get in touch with me if you'd like what you've heard. Message me on my socials. Please make sure you subscribe to this podcast, share it with your pals, and feel free to give us a 5-star rating. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye for now.